We try here on Extra to bring you a mix of stories from around the world, ones that do represent outright wicked problems. But we also try to avoid persistently sounding like a chorus of doom about the world, focus only on intractable problems. However, some situations demand our attention because suffering endures on such a considerable scale and because our attention just might help change things. The Rohingya people of Myanmar sit in this category, about 750,000 of whom are believed to have fled from their homes towards neighbouring Bangladesh last year due to the actions of the Burmese military, and they're now living in camps that'll soon feel the force of the annual monsoon, so expect those headlines. The not-for-profit group Human Rights Watch calls it Southeast Asia's most significant human rights and humanitarian crisis since the 70s. During the week, I attended a briefing given by its Burma researcher, ex-marine and political scientist plus lawyer Richard Weir, who's been on the ground in Bangladesh, who is appealing, if we do seek improvement, appealing for us to maintain our gaze on the Rohingya's plight and Burmese decision-making.
Thanks for having me.
If we've taken our eyes off the ball with the Rohingya because we all thought that someone was solving it, why do you say this is the wrong approach? Why is international attention vital?
Well, it's the wrong approach simply because the human rights crisis in Burma and Bangladesh continues to this day. The attention of the international community, there hasn't been enough attention. We haven't seen a single resolution out of the UN Security Council with respect to this situation, and not a single resolution in the face of crimes against humanity, in the face of ethnic cleansing. And it is vital that the international community remain seized of this situation. Otherwise, we're going to be facing an increasing crisis with respect to the Rohingya population.
But this is because the Russians and the Chinese in particular would veto any effort at a Security Council resolution, and that's not going to change, is it?
That's correct. The Chinese and the Russian governments have been actively undermining any attempt for serious action in the UN Security Council. But that's not the only way that the international community can remain seized. Now, an important step that they took was the establishment of the fact-finding mission after a vote in March in the Human Rights Council in 2017. That was an important step that created an important body that will continue to keep attention.
But that's still underway?
That's still underway. They're going to report their findings in September in 2018, so later this year. And they're doing their work, but there's still more the international community can be doing in order to make sure that the people who have committed these atrocities in Burma aren't left thinking that they can continue to do what they've done.
You suggested that there was an urgency. This is Human Rights Watch's central message. There's an urgency. Things are not normal. We cannot proceed in a business-as-usual fashion. What are you particularly seeking from, say, countries like Australia?
Right. I think one of the issues is the tendency to see what's happening as a humanitarian situation that, of course, needs urgent attention. But this is more than anything else. This is a human rights crisis. The Rohingya population is having their rights violated every single day. Every single day that they wake up in the morning, we're talking about extensive restrictions, not just on their citizenship, on their right to basically formally exist in the country that they've lived in for all of their lives and for generations, but on freedom of movement. They can't leave their villages, on access to health care, on education. And that simply just cannot be lost in the mix, in sort of all of the chaos of everything else that's happening. And the Australian government can take a number of steps, and I think it's important to note the Australian government has made some strong statements with respect to accountability and humanitarian access, especially in the context of the Human Rights Council. But there are other things that can be done, like imposing targeted sanctions against the perpetrators in the military of these atrocities.
Who's done that?
Well, right now we're talking about a number of people that could likely be found responsible for these violations. An important figure in all this, of course, is Senior General Min Aung Hlaing, who's the Commander-in-Chief. And the other person that has drawn the attention of a number of other governments who have heeded the call to impose targeted sanctions is the former commander of the Western Regional Command, Meng Mongso. Both Canada and the United States have imposed targeted sanctions, which effectively make it impossible for them to travel and make it more difficult for them to engage in international monetary transactions. The EU has also announced their intention to file these targeted sanctions, although they haven't released a set of names yet. And the other thing, too, is to recognize that the Australian government quite simply cannot continue with business as usual with the Burmese military. And what I'm talking about specifically is an increase in funds to do training with the military.
With which we've had a long relationship with the Burmese military.
Yeah, that's right. And I think one of the important things to note is that the Burmese government and the Burmese military more specifically is paying attention to how other militaries treat them. And to the extent that they're afforded the opportunity to participate, they see this as an elevation of their prestige. And that is really the wrong message that the international community should be sending to a military that has recently engaged. This isn't something that is historical. The very people that they would be engaging and providing, you know, a boost to their prestige are the people that have presided over this ethnic cleansing campaign and these crimes against humanity.
Because they see it as answering terrorism that occurred. Now, is there any legitimacy to that claim?
Right. Well, I mean, of course, the most recent campaign of ethnic cleansing and crimes against humanity was brought on by the 30 coordinated attacks by the Arakan Rohingya Salvation militant group.
Do you know any of them?
I don't know any of these militants. I mean, I think one of the things that can't be put to the side is the nature of this group. From what we know, it's quite small. It's extraordinarily poorly armed. They seized a number of guns, have been reportedly manufactured some improvised explosive devices, but this is not an army, right? This is a ragtag crew of Rohingya that have been training in the mountains, literally using wooden guns. And yet the Burmese military response is to burn 362 villages in part or in whole, to conduct operations that involve the use of widespread rape, to murder individuals, to shoot them as they're running away, to burn people in their own homes. This is something that can't legitimately be viewed as a counterterrorism operation.
Now, just let's get back to the question of urgency, because what is life like in the camps? You've been there, you've been on the ground, and the monsoon is due fairly soon, isn't it? Won't that exacerbate matters?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the biggest tragedies of all of this is that how the very weather conditions themselves compound the already extraordinarily difficult situation and conditions in which the Rohingya population in Bangladesh now live. When they first came to Bangladesh in August, it was still the monsoon season. And even then, they would build homes. And really, homes, we're talking about bamboo sticks and plastic tarps. And the next day, they would be washed away. People were literally swimming to get back to the road to save themselves and their children from yet another catastrophe. And this is not something that's going to change. The monsoon season is not an aberration. It happens every single year. And the area is highly susceptible to being completely torn apart by cyclones.
See, surely some other countries are going to have to offer mass homes to people. I'm thinking of Australia again, and they'll start to use people smugglers to push out to places like Southeast Asia and maybe even Australia. Isn't this the next step?
Yeah, I mean, this is a huge concern, and this wouldn't be the first time that a crisis like this has erupted. From 2012 to 2015, a massive human trafficking and smuggling architecture was erected, and thousands fled. Hundreds or even thousands were killed during the process or died because of conditions.
And that's when we had that sort of question of boats moving around full of people going nowhere.
That's right. And people left to die out on these boats by smugglers. And I mean, even in the past couple of days, we've seen at least 56 Rohingya arrive on the shores of Malaysia. Now, it's difficult to confirm where they came from. There's some reports indicating they came from Sitwe, but
which is in Rakhine State.
But there's no reason that countries shouldn't, in the region, and Australia shouldn't expect, as conditions deteriorate, that more people aren't going to get on boats and try to flee these horrific conditions.
Well, Richard Weir, good luck to you, and I hope your energy continues. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Richard Weir, who's the Burma researcher for Human Rights Watch, and we'll have details on our website of how you can access some of their material, which is pretty challenging.